Okay. Thanks, Ron. It's kind of got a frog in my throat. A little bit of moisture, I guess, is kind of detrimental there, but we'll make it through. We're going to continue with our study on the word walk, and this is study 7, and we've looked at or went through about 20 places where walk is mentioned in Scripture, and there's 212 places where walk occurs, so we've done going through I believe number 20 and 21 tonight. Hopefully we'll get that far. We're going to leave Leviticus and we're going to get in Deuteronomy. This is going to be study 7. What we started here, and of course, this is October the 15th, 2014, for the tape's sake. And we're going to look at the 8th chapter of Deuteronomy, and where the word walk occurs twice. And there's only 20 verses, and some of them are pretty much self-explanatory, and some of them we might need to do a little more, a little harder look at it. But, you know, we wound up with Leviticus, and we wound up with God telling them what would happen if they, when they went into the promised land, and they got involved in idol worship there, what would be their fate. And then we get over here in Deuteronomy, and we get into the 8th chapter, and this is just before the 9th chapter. And, of course, in the 9th chapter, Moses ascends up on the mountain, and he gets the tablets of stone, and he comes down, and guess what? The children have done exactly what the Lord didn't want them to do. So I think chapter 8 is a good chapter to look at in that respect, because the theme kind of continues on, but it continues with the younger group of people, because they started out and they had a bunch of older folks in the wandering in the wilderness for the 40 years. And we find that some of these, according to the words that are used here, are younger, and that some of the old ones passed on or got swallowed up during the time that they were in the wilderness. So he's dealing basically, I think, with a younger set of Israelites, but nevertheless, you know, I guess some things just don't change, or it's very hard to change. So let's get involved in this and see how far we can go. Deuteronomy 8, if you got a companion Bible, it's on page 250. And if you don't, I can't help you because I don't know. Yeah. So let's look at 8:1. In 8:1 it says this: all the commandments which I command thee this day shall ye observe to do, that ye may live and multiply and go in and possess the land which the Lord sware unto your fathers. So the start in 8 here is he's talking about all the commandments, and the commandments here are plural, but it's the meaning here, I think, is every single command or commandment, every single one makes up the whole. So I think he's even though if it, the commandment or commandments are plural, it still means the whole or the entire single ones, and it means the whole law. And he has given them instructions to carry out, and that's what he wants done. And it includes everything that he has told them to this point. And then he says, all the commandments which I command thee this day, and this day here is a solemn saying. And it's used for great emphasis, and it's used 13 times. In this section, these sections here, and it's put in there for great emphasis. It's kind of like this day. Verily, verily, I say unto you this day.
Same thing.
You know, it's the same thing. It's put in there for its immediacy, if you want to say it that way. But it's for great emphasis, and and he says to observe and do that you may live and multiply and go in and possess the land which the Lord swear unto your fathers. And certainly Jehovah promised this land by an oath. He says, you know, I'll give you this land. And certainly they were in the wilderness, and going through this journey that they were going through, this trial or testing or probation period, whatever you want to call it, there to go into the land, and many of them didn't get to go because of their murmurings and the situations that they had. They come up with Moses, God's man, and the leadership, and of course, they had the smoking cloud and the pillar of fire and all this to show that God was with them. It was kind of like, and I think back to Mikey's study a week or two ago, that, you know, the pillar of fire and all this, to me, represented the Shekinah glory. It was there to show those folks that God hadn't left them, that He was still around. He was still there. And I don't know if that was ever brought up in that study or not, but I got to thinking about that too. And I said, well, you know, it was there for a reason. It was there for a purpose. And he says in verse 2, and thou shalt remember all the ways which the Lord thy God led thee these 40 years in the wilderness. Listen now. To humble thee and to prove thee, to know what was in thine heart, whether thou wouldest keep his commandments or no. So it kind of gives you a picture here again. And I know I'm talking to the choir, but, you know, the picture is quite clear that this was done for a purpose, and it was done for a reason. So he said, the Lord God led them 40 years. That's, of course, 40 is the number of probation. When you see 40, you know, there's basically a test going on here somewhere. It's something that God wanted cleared up. And if it takes 40 years, that's not time. Is something that he put here for man, not for God. That's not an important factor for God, but it certainly is for man. And he says, led thee 40 years in the wilderness or in the desert. And certainly, I don't think one could argue the fact that it wasn't a desert situation. It certainly was. And to humble thee, and to humble there was to prove or to know, and it was God's test. I can't think of anything else that I could explain it any clearer to anyone, that it was a test that God set forth on his people to get to know, to prove, and to know what was in thine heart. And to get to know there is that word that we've been running up on quite a lot in the Old Testament, and it's anthropopathia. And it's things ascribed to God that belongs to man. So that made it quite clear there that he wanted to see what was in man's heart, and to know if they would keep his words, his sayings, his commandments. Because when God speaks, it's important, it's necessary as to how and when and why he speaks. And so he wanted to know if he was going to stay within those commandments, if he was going to live within that area of rules that had been set down for man. Verse 3, and it said, and he humbled thee and suffered thee to hunger, and fed them with manna, which thou knewest not, neither did thy fathers know, that he might make thee know that man doth not live by bread only, but by every word that proceeded out of the mouth of the Lord doth man live. And even Christ used that. If you look at Matthew 4:4 and Luke 4:4, that word was used by Jesus when he was here on the earth. That man doesn't live by bread alone. But the fact is, and here's something that I had probably read, but it kind of went over my head, I guess, at a point. But he said he humbled thee. He brought man down with hunger while they were in the wilderness, while they were in the desert area. And then he said that he fed them with manna. And of course, I think we've all heard the story back in Exodus. And if you look at Exodus 16 through 23, Exodus 16, 23 through 31, it gives you all that thing. And it might be good just to go back there and look for a minute. Keep your finger here in Deuteronomy and turn back with me to Exodus. And I said it was Exodus 16. And it's on page 96. Let's look at 23 through 31. Won't take but a minute or two to read it. And we'll go back and we'll get a little better picture of what we're talking about here. It's on page 96 if you have a companion Bible. 16:23, and he said, and he said unto them, this is that which the Lord hath said, tomorrow is the rest of the holy Sabbath unto the Lord. Bake that which ye bake today, and seethe that which ye seethe, and that which remaineth over lay up for you to be kept until the morning. And they laid it up until the morning as Moses bade, and it did not stink, neither was there any worms therein. So they had gone through this period already to where they had saved up, thinking that they could maybe do a week's worth at one time, and it just didn't work out. And it was stinking, and it had worms. Verse 25, Moses said, "Eat that today, for today is the Sabbath unto the Lord. Today ye shall not find it in the field. 6 days ye shall gather it, but on the seventh day, which is the Sabbath, in it there shall be none." Who couldn't understand that?
That's pretty straightforward.
But look at 27. "And it came to pass that there went out some of the people on the seventh day for to gather, and they found none." Gee. Hard-headed folks, isn't it? Yeah. "And the Lord said unto Moses, how long refuse you to keep my commandments and my law?" You know, again, the statement is, you know, you've got to live within the means, these parameters that I've set up for you. This law that we've established, you've got to live within those means. It's not going to vary. It says, "See, for that the Lord hath given you the Sabbath, therefore he giveth you on the sixth day the bread of 2 days. Abide ye every man in his place, and let no man go out of his place on the seventh day." So the people rested on the seventh day. And the house of Israel called the name thereof Manna. And it was like coriander seed, white, and the taste of it was like wafers made with honey. So it gives you the...
What a coriander seed was?
I don't know, but it was... I guess it was really white, because these wafers that they were making, you know, were very white. And it says, that was what I wanted to read there. So they called it manna, and it was coriander, like coriander seed, white. It doesn't say it was coriander seed, it said it was like coriander seed. And the taste of it was like wafers made with honey. So, it was a kind of a sweet bread type thing. And so that's where it came from. Now, when you get back to verse 3 in chapter 8, it says, "Fed them with manna which they knewest not, and neither did the fathers know." So he's talking to a group of young people here, evidently, and they didn't know anything about manna, and even the fathers didn't know anything about manna. It was something that God gave them when they were in this trial situation, and he brought them down to hunger. And so he provided for it. Here again is another picture of God making provisions for his people that they couldn't make for themselves. And so he is the provider. God is the provider. And so they didn't know. They certainly didn't know that much about this manna, this stuff that they would go out and gather and have to use it for food. But it was called bread. And that's what it was referred to here. It says, "That he might make thee known that man doeth not live by bread alone, but by every word that proceeded out of the mouth of the Lord doth man live." So, not only when he provides that food, but he expects the commandments to be heeded. The parameters of that law that he set up had to be taken care of. That was what he, that was his requirement. So, he provides for them, but, you know, they've got to heed the words along with, you know, if they're going to get this stuff, then they're going to have to heed what he says. So it says, man doesn't live by bread only, but by every word, all things, all words that comes from God, the words and the bread together. You can't separate the one from the other. You can't just use the bread. And so that was part of the text, I think. And then verse 4, and then this kind of got me too, because I thought, gee, thy raiment waxed not old upon thee, neither did thy foot swell these 40 years. So they're about to cross over Jordan and go into the promised land. And so we find here that their clothing, even their clothing didn't age while they were in the wilderness, in the desert. And I thought, my goodness, you know, this 40 years looked like the clothes would be dropping off of them. But see, God's plan and purpose is sure and true, and it, you know, he makes provisions. And if he provides for his people, this is another thing here that he provided for, that, you know, they didn't need to bother with in their journey, that they didn't need to bother with their clothing. And he says, no swell feet on your 40-year track. If you were walking, basically walking for 40 years, it would appear that, you know, there would be a lot of folks there with a lot of problems walking in a desert situation. You know, because it, surely it gets hot.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing.
Yeah. And then we get down to verse 5. And he says, and thou shalt also consider in thine heart that as a man chasteneth his son, so the Lord thy God chasteneth thee. So he says, as or according as a man chasteneth his son, he corrects him as instructions, also as well as giving him life's lesson. And this is how God also works. God was giving them life lessons, but he also was correcting them with the instructions of these commandments. He expected certain things from them. If he was feeding them and watching over them and clothing them, and all these things, doing all this stuff for them, the expectations was that they would walk according to his will. That their manner of life would be as God wanted it to be. Because he had chosen, you know, these lessons, these instructions here. And if you think about it and you think in your heart, if a man keeps his son straight, certainly God has every right to keep his children straight, the ones he's chosen to be his, okay? Then we get to verse 6. Here we find the therefore. And, you know, always down through the years when I see the word therefore, you know, I really want to stop and think about it a minute and see what therefore is there for. And I kindly, in my notes, I kindly make me a little railroad crossing. You remember the old-timey railroad crossings with the cross arms? And they didn't have all these whistles and lights and everything then. And there was places it was blind, and you better come to stop at the and look both ways and listen, think about what's going on. And so that's my therefore, stop, look, and listen. So he says, therefore, thou shalt keep the commandments of the Lord thy God to walk in his ways, not in man's ways, but to walk in his ways. So that's what the expectation is there. This cause to live is should be directly as to what God has said it should be, to follow these commandments and do these things. To walk in his ways and to fear him. Well, that cause to live there is or to walk there is the cause to live. And that one is 32:12 in the Hebrew, and it's Yalak, and it means a manner of life or cause to live in his ways. And his ways is under the direction of God. That's the reason to give the commandments. And to fear him. Well, you know, a lot of times we see, especially in the Old Testament, that those folks were to fear God. They really and truly needed to understand God's power. If he can cause these things to happen and cause all these things to take place, then, you know, that ought to get the attention of these folks. And if he says don't do these things, he has the power to make your life miserable. We went through all that in Leviticus, where he says, when you get into your country now, if you don't do this, you're really going to be in bad shape, because I'm going to see that it's seven times worse on you. Okay? And so they need to understand the power of God. That's one thing. I don't think, you know, this thing about fear is, I think it's understanding God's power and understanding and minding what he says. It's like a disobedient child that doesn't want to mind his parent. You know, if he don't feel any repercussions from it, then there's not much to fear. But if something's got payment at the end of it, then the payment sometimes can be bad. Okay, let's look at verse 7. It said, for the Lord thy God bringeth thee into a good land, a land of brooks of water, of fountains and depths that spring out of the valleys and the hills. Now he's telling them, giving them a picture of their land, you know, and what it's going to look like. And this here where it says to spring out, bringeth thee into a good land, a land of brooks of water. Well, they've been in the desert. And water's kind of tough to come by in the desert.
Good to them about that time, wasn't it?
Yeah, and so, you know, this would sound great to one's ears if he'd been wondering in the desert for 40 years and said, look, there's going to be little brooks flowing everywhere. They're going to be, you know, in the valleys and in the mountains. And because the hills there are actually mountains. So this spring out is another thing that sometimes we look at and don't really consider, because quite often when they come to these places where they were water, they would have to draw it because they had, it was a dug well. They would have to, you know, somebody sometime had dug something. But when something springs out of the ground, it just flows out, you know, springs. We have springs around here. My grandmother used to keep her milk, eggs, and butter and all in a spring. And that water came out of the, flowed out of the ground. And so it gushed forth, and they didn't have to dig. They're going to have water without having to work to get it. It's just going to be there. In the valleys, in the hills, or the mountains. And then we get down to verse 8, and it even gets better. The picture gets more rosy. It says, a land of wheat and barley and vines and fig trees and pomegranates. A land of oil, olive, and honey. So here, he's talking about bread and not manna. See, they're going into a land where they don't have to have all these provisions that God provides other than the normal things that are there. And he's talking about wheat and barley. That's two staples that they make bread out of, wheat and barley. So this is the bread. And then he talks about the vines where you get the grapes, basically, and which makes the wine. And then you got the fruit trees, you got the fig trees and the pomegranates, which yields its fruit. Of course, the olive, which yields its fruit for both fruit and oil. And they have oil that they can use, to go in their other food. And then he talks about the honey there. And the honey is, of course, the sweetener, the sugar. It's like the manna was, you know, it said manna that tasted like it had honey added to it. So the sweetness of the honey. Then you get down to verse 9. It says, a land wherein thou shalt eat bread without scarceness. Thou shalt not lack anything in it. A land whose stones are iron, and out of whose hills or mountains thou mayest dig brass. You know, we've talked about this a little before, about the brass there, and it's basically a copper-based thing, because brass is a concoction that man concocts together, taken from the ground that God has given us. And he says, without scarceness there in verse 9, and it's a sign of plenty or abundance. And certainly, we went over a study where we talked about abound or abounding. And if you don't have any scarceness, then, you know, you don't have to worry about your next meal or where that's coming from, because God said back in Leviticus that if you did followed his instructions and did, said you could eat the stores, because there was more right behind it. There was more coming through. You could eat the old, because the new would be in before the old got gone. Okay? That's without scarceness. Okay? And it also says that the land whose stones are iron. So you have a land that's got iron ore involved in it. You got the other minerals involved in it that can be mixed with copper to make the proper amount of brass stuff. And of course, brass is basically a copper base, metal that, can certainly be purified down to a point where it's very good for, you know, eating without germs and things like that. It's like silver. It can have a finish on it that's very, very sweet for mankind. Then it says in verse 10, and 10 through 13 is, you know, kind of runs together. But I think when you look at this, I believe you would agree that that the cart gets before the horse a little bit in this situation. Verse 10. And it says, when thou hast eaten and art full, then thou shalt bless the Lord thy God for the good land which he has given thee. And that sounds very easy to follow in that sense, but I believe that thanksgiving or a blessing should come first, because when we go and look at these other verses, we find that forgetting is not acceptable unto God. And so it's pretty easy when you get a full stomach, you lay back, to forget where all this come from or who or how you got it. And so let's look at the rest of this. Let's look at 11, 12, 13. When we look at 11, 12, and 13, then, you know, I believe the agreement would go that way, because he says, beware that thou forget not the Lord thy God in not keeping his commandments and his judgments and his statutes, which I command thee this day. And here again, there's one of this day there in 11. And then we get up to 12, and it says, lest when thou hast eaten and art full and hast built goodly houses and dwelt therein, and when thy herds and thy flocks multiply and thy silver and thy gold is multiplied and all that thou hast is multiplied. You know, if everything's going real good, we have a tendency to forget where it come from. And so I think if we go back to 10, where I feel like maybe that it should have read that you need to ask the blessing of the Lord before thou hast eaten and art full. Because that would seem to me to remember God first, rather than later. And that seems to be a question to me that I would ask my own self. And you can agree or not agree with it, but to me it made more sense if you heed the commandments of God and ask him and give thanks to him for blessing you with all these things, with the full houses, the crops, all these things that he has blessed you with. You can certainly do that before and during, and you wouldn't have to wait till after. And because it says in 14, then thy heart be lifted up, and thou forget the Lord thy God, which brought thee forth out of the land of Egypt from the house of bondage. And he called Egypt the house of bondage, because that's literally what the Egyptians were doing to the children of Israel. They were in bondage. They were worked like slaves. And so, he said, you know, it's very easy to allow self to fill and control. You know, your heart can be lifted up. You can get this ego thing going and allow yourself to fill in control. And really, when God is in control. And he also, to the point, goes on to say, in my mind, remember the bondage and the yokes that were over in Egypt when I brought you out of the land, from the house of bondage. Certainly, they weren't able to do that themselves. So God did that. And he wanted to remind them of it. And it's awful easy to, for man to get wrapped up in himself and say, well, look what I done. When really, it belongs to the Lord. In 15, it says, kind of, it's like a question. Who led thee through the great and terrible wilderness? Or the desert, wherein were fiery serpents and scorpions and drought, where there was no water. Who brought the fourth water out of the rock of flint? You remember when God caused Moses to strike the rock and the water come forth? He's reminding him all these things. So 15, it says, who led thee? It's a kind of a question. Who led thee out? Remember? In the wilderness, the desert? You remember the fiery serpents that came upon them and they had to build a... They hung the serpent up on the stake. And when they get bit, they could go and look at the serpent. And so that was...
That's where the medical symbol...
Right. That's our medical symbol now. And that fiery serpent there are the word Nakash. Where do you hear that from? Genesis 1, not 1, but maybe Genesis 2 or 3. So they had a venomous mouth. The fiery serpents had a venomous mouth, and he talks about scorpions. Well, the scorpions have a venomous tail. So when you talk about the two, one can get you with his mouth, the other can get you with his tail. And, it creates the poison, very poisonous situation. And then he talks about the drought, where there was no water. And that's where they were, in the wilderness. They, water was hard to come by, but he provided the water. In 16, he goes on with this who business. He said, who fed thee in the wilderness with manna, which thy fathers knew not? See, he's talking to a younger group now. He said, your fathers didn't know about manna. And he also said over there, you didn't know about it either. That was God's little secret till he brought it upon them and allowed Moses to show them what they needed to do. He said that he might humble thee, that he might give proof thee to do thee good at thy latter end. All this was a test that in the end of this thing, before they crossed the Jordan, they had to lesson down that whenever they went over into the land to overtake it, because they had to run these folks out that were over there. And whenever they come in to take it, that they, would keep God's word and keep God's will going in their life. And so we get down to 17. And thou say in thine heart, thy power and their might, and the might of mine hand hath gotten me this wealth. And that's just the old man, basically, you know, when we get over the New Testament, man wants to look at his results of his labor and think, well, you know, I did all this myself. Really? Gee. And so much he says, well, my power and mine and the might of mine hand hath gotten me this wealth. But, 18. And I like that but there. But, remember. That but is, could be a remember. Remember, thou shalt remember the Lord thy God, for it is he that giveth thee power to get wealth, that he may establish his covenant, which he sware unto thy fathers, as it is this day. There again is this day. But you see the he there and his are italic, they're in italics, you know. So we know who he's talking about, the Lord thy God. It was he that giveth power to get wealth. It's so, you know, this kind of punches the bubble that man has blown up, or his balloon that he's blown up for himself, you know. And God is, certainly can deflate that. Just as easy as man could blow it up, God can deflate it. And it says in verse 19, and it shall be that if thou do all at all forget the Lord thy God and walk after other gods and serve them and worship them, I testify against you this day that ye shall surely perish. 19. If thou do at all forget, this is a warning. I mean a dire warning. And walk after. That word there, to walk after, means to depart from the ways of God, to leave the things that God said you should do. And that's number 1980. And that is the word halak. And what are you going to depart to? You're going to depart to other gods and serve them and worship them. The other gods there are idols. To worship them and serve them, or serve them and worship them. And this was something that, again, he talked about over and over that he did not want them to do when they got into the land of promise. This was something new. You know, and of course, guess what? They did it in the next chapter in the book of Deuteronomy. And he says, I will testify against, I will swear unto you, this day, today, you shall surely perish. And that perish there is Abad, A-B-A-D. And it means not to have a way to escape. When God says you'll perish, you perish. There's no escape. There's no deliverance. There's no way out. Then we get to verse 20, and this is the last of what is in this chapter, and it's going to be just about what we need to do to finish up. And we'll stop here when we get this one. And it says, as the nations which the Lord destroyed before your face, so shall ye perish, because you would not be obedient unto the voice of the Lord your God. You would not be obedient. And it says, as the nations which the Lord destroyed in 20. Now, they were in the wilderness, been in the wilderness for 40 years. Some of these people were young people. Their parents had probably perished because they had done these things against the will of God while they were in the wilderness, in the desert. So the nations there, I think, was the older of God's people that come out of Egypt. That was part of the nation of Israel, because God gave up on them. He gave them up. And a lot of them perished in different aspects, in different manners. And they perished, he says, which the Lord destroyed before your face. Meaning that the people he's talking to here, he says that, you know, your eyes have seen your parents or seen your friends or seen your kin swallowed up or perished for disobedience unto God. Because they would not be obedient. They felt like that they didn't need to heed the voice of God, the words of God. Now, when God talks, man always needs to listen, because certainly, you know, the clay can't ever ask the potter, why did he make me so?
Amen.
You know, so you have to put your priorities in order here, and the priority here is the voice of God. If he's going to provide you with all these things, even give you pictures, a mind's picture of what it's going to be like, then certainly could man not stop and think about this and say, well, you know, this is better than anything I've ever had. Oh, gee. That's kind of like mystery truth, isn't it? Mystery truth is something that we've not always had. But yet man reads over it and never understands it. And I think this is an example of what these people are doing. Just like some people go to service all their life and never come to the real understanding of mystery truth and what it is and what it can be. You know, it's fair. Got the same Bible I got. But they, you know, they cannot heed what God has said in those terms. And by not doing it, look what they missed. Or look what can be missed by not doing that.
Yes.
Think on that. You know, as we go through this, this is not just something that just makes the book this big. I mean, we've got to get we've got to understand and realize that as we read through it, why it's there and the lessons that it jumps out at us as we go through it. And we see the comparisons from then, you know, even till now. And we realize and understand that God provides us even now with all these things that, you know, He's the glue that keeps all this stuff together and keeps it going. We say, oh, look what we done. Look what we done. Yeah. Look what we done. But a lot of times we can't understand. God really has to put us in a submission hold sometimes to allow us the understanding of what He's got for us. It's better. Thank you for being with us. Love y'all. Continue to pray for us. We, you, each and every one of you, we think of you when we go to the Lord in prayer. And let's uphold each other.
Amen.
Before the throne of grace. That somehow, some way, we'll do in our respective places what the Lord would have us to do. And give us certainty in the reason for being where we are. I know we're scattered out, but yet we're knit together. So thank you so much for being with us tonight. May God bless you.